This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
Luster gets another backer.
And my notes from the HPC and Biomed conference.
Hello, everyone, and good morning for HPC Wire Soundbite for October 22nd, 2010, available every Friday on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined once again by Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Hey, good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
Well, we've sort of got you between travel events there, but glad to have you on the show this Friday.
I'm happy to be here, as always. So, but I can always count on reading HPC Wire to keep up on the news when I'm traveling.
Yeah, this is sort of an off week in the news. I think there's going to be a little bit of lull in the news cycle until we get to some of the upcoming events. But we did have some news this week. We had a new nonprofit sort of burst onto the scene, backed by some of the big names: Cray, DataDirect, Lawrence Livermore, and Oak Ridge. It's a nonprofit aimed at scalable file systems, and particularly at Luster. Now, you remember we reported on Luster a lot in the past. We reported on WAM Cloud, which was a vendor that's going to sell development work for that for right. Luster and HPC. And now this is a nonprofit corporation.
Well, this has been a big story for us because we've been concerned about the long term fate of Luster for HPC. Now that Oracle owns it and had previously stated that the future versions of Luster would only be supported on Oracle hardware, right. Which is particularly horrifying when you consider that the phrase Oracle hardware didn't exist until recently, right?
Exactly. Right. The post 2.0 Luster is only going to go onto, like you said, the Oracle database hardware, and they're going to support it under Open Solaris, which doesn't mean much in the HPC universe. So, right. Yeah, that was a little disturbing, I think. And so now you have sort of the community scrambling, and this looks like a nice development. I mean, we've had the individual vendors out there with their own stakes, and WAM Cloud is focused solely on doing this, but they're a for-profit company. And then there's other smaller companies like Terascale and Xyratex and some of the vendors like DataDirect and Cray and some of the others that have Luster expertise in their companies, but there's sort of no organizing principle anymore now that Oracle has sort of gone this different direction.
Well, and this is why this consortium matters so much. I mean, we did cover the WAM Cloud story when they launched, and if you'll recall, I was glad that we had somebody who was claiming some responsibility, but one of my concerns with it was that WAM Cloud didn't necessarily have the buy-in of the broader community, the multiple vendors and the national research labs that have a stake in Luster's ongoing development. Now, this non-for-profit that you're reporting on does seem to have that, and furthermore, gives WAM Cloud a way to play through that group of users and vendors.
Right. I mean, this new organization isn't going to be doing the Luster work itself. So they're going to be sort of this aggregation point for the community, bring in members into this nonprofit. And I'm assuming there'll be companies like WAM Cloud, all the DOE labs, and globally all the research institutions and vendors that have a stake in seeing Luster and HPC move forward. And then sort of bring those in, charge membership dues, and out of those membership dues, be able to fund certain initiatives, features, fixes for what the community needs. So that's the model. They're not competing against the WAM clouds. They're going to be feeding them, presumably, and others in the Luster ecosystem.
Yeah, and that's going to be critical to see who's in and who's out on this kind of thing. And, you know, the companies you started mentioning, Terascale, Xyratex, you know, these are great companies with great technology, but they were really in on Luster. So for them to have an avenue to continue to bring solutions to market based on Luster, I think is going to be very important for them. Cray as well, you mentioned, their data management strategy has been Luster focused. It's not clear yet where companies like Dell are going to come down on this. You know, Dell hasn't made a full-on commitment to one file system or another yet. So I'll be interested to see where they play. Right now, Dell has partnerships with companies like Terascala, so they're going to be in that way. But we haven't seen a full-scale commitment from Dell on either side yet, right?
Right. I mean, they haven't announced any of the members. Now, I talked to the CEO of this new group, Norman Morse, and he says they've basically got 20 members ready to sign up. They haven't announced them yet, or they haven't actually officially got them in because they're still sort of dotting the I's and crossing the T's on some of the legal framework of the corporation. But he's thinking over the next subsequent weeks we'll be hearing about announcements of people coming in. Now, the real sort of crux of this is there's sort of three ways to get into this corporation. There's three levels of membership. And at the highest level, you can become what they call a promoter. And that costs $500,000 a year. And that buys you a seat on the board. And so, obviously, at that level, you're going to have a lot of influence on how this, how the Luster money or the money collected gets used and what features are funded and who gets that. At the next level is contributor adopter, and that's $50,000 a year, and then below that it's $5,000 a year if you just want to be a supporter. At $50,000 you get to manage a working group, and the working groups are the groups that actually sort of decide what efforts get supported, and then they go out and then contract for this. But they have to collect this money, and it's all going to be funded out of this membership money. So they're going to need at least a few people at the $500,000 level to get a decent critical mass of money to fund some of these development efforts.
That $500,000 was a surprising number to me. I mean, that's an astonishing amount of cash to commit to something like this. I mean, we were running down that list of companies. I don't know who's going to put up $500,000 in cash for this.
Yeah, I don't think they need too many. I mean, it does get you a seat on the board. So you figure out, like, what's a usual board entail, like 4 to 6 people, maybe a corporation this size. So,
yeah, I'm wondering whether that $500,000 level can include in-kind contributions. Like, I give you a programmer who's worth $200,000 a year and I keep paying him, but he's working on this. Or you get computer time on my resource, which, you know, I would normally bill out at this, right?
Right.
If it's in-kind contributions at that level, then I could see it. But $500,000 in cash, I'm wondering how that works.
Yeah, well, they have to be a little careful too. So if you gave like a developer and say this guy's worth $100,000 a year, and you're, let's say, your Cray or your Data Direct, you know, you are a nonprofit, so there's certain legal ramifications to that, as far as, you know, how you dispensate the money that you've collected. So it sort of has to be a little more transparent than you might be in a profit type organization. So yeah. Not sure how that's going to work, but they are going to need a certain critical mass of this money to get this thing going. But, you know, the CEO, Norman Morse, seemed pretty optimistic about this. Like he said, he had 20 ready to sign up. He thinks he can get maybe 50 to 60 organizations total in the community that will become members of this. And he thinks that that'll basically bootstrap this and get this going forward.
Well, at that $5,000 level, you know, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, for someone to pay $5,000, that's under a lot of people's discretionary budgets to be able to say we're involved in this Luster community. And I think you'll even find some of the larger organizations that are willing to put up $50,000 in cash. It was,
yeah,
it was that $500,000. I mean, every power of 10 step up, you know, what does $5 million get me now, right?
Yeah, well, it buys you the whole thing. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, who does become a board member there. But, you know, certainly there's the stakeholders. I mean, some of these guys have big stakes in having Luster move forward. They've got large, yep, systems deployed now, especially the DOE labs and other research institutions around the world. They've got these huge Luster systems, and they have plans for future ones. So they can't just let it go. They can't leave it up to Oracle, and they probably don't want to pay, you know, their own staff or contract to something like WhamCloud necessarily all the time to do this work, and sort of depend upon the ecosystem basically fold all these fixes back into the source repository that Oracle's maintaining. I mean, that was one of the big things too. This organization, and I think all the member groups, don't want to fork the source tree of Luster at this point. They want to keep it monolithic.
Yeah, and that was the other concern we had with regards to the long-term viability of Lustre for HPC is if it's just this open source skunkworks thing and everyone's doing their own thing, then we turn around twice and we've got eight different versions of Lustre out there, and that's not going to do anybody any good in the long term. So, you know, this gives us the best chance of maintaining a single version of Lustre for HPC. There'll still be different versions of enterprise Lustre that'll be under Oracle, but, you know, I think that's survivable.
Yeah, it's theoretically workable. I mean, right, Oracle is taking this different path, but I think some of the enhancements that we're talking about here, at least these guys were talking about, they haven't come up with the feature sets yet that they're going to add, but it's going to be broadly adaptable just by basically making the Lustre more scalable, adding more robustness to it, that sort of thing. And beyond the Lustre work, this organization is also devoted to sort of bringing, you know, the Lustre technology and some of the other research file system technologies and bring those forward into Exascale to support Exascale type systems as well. So it's not just Lustre for this group. They want to all go forward and bring some of these technologies into something that may or may not be Lustre, you know, 5 or 7 years, 8 years down the road. So
yeah,
they've got
may or may not be Lustre is a good way to think about it, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, I have a feeling it'll all be derived from this, and I think the community will want to move forward en masse like they've done with Lustre. And it'll be an open source solution because this group, like a lot of the stakeholders, are committed to an open source file system, and we've got GPFS that IBM is involved with. But you know, we've seen a lot of support for these open source system software solutions, so I think that'll continue as well.
Well, we'll see how it all works out. I just spoke earlier this week with one group that's very concerned with this data management, and the desire to have a scalable open source file system is a big topic of conversation at the HPC and Biomed conference at Harvard Medical School earlier this week.
Right. You got a chance to see that. It looked like I was just, you know, looking at the agenda before the conference, and this week there was a lot of talk about storage, about, you know, scaling it up to petabytes and beyond. It seems like that's a big issue in the biomed community right now.
Well, I think it's a big issue across all HPC verticals right now, and it certainly was the top topic of conversation for this conference. I mean, it was the first one they got into after the keynotes. It was the one they spent the most time on. And even other topics like cloud computing broke down to data management needs pretty quickly. And I think it's just one of the many industries where their need for big data, either in terms of large files or in terms of many small files with access, is increasing faster than a lot of people's IO infrastructures. And they're looking for what are the data management aspects of their growth potential.
Right. I see the same thing. You're right. I mean, the storage area, it seems to be outpacing sort of the computational capabilities right now. It's growing faster than the computers are growing, and they're trying to figure out how to sort of reconnect the two. And yeah, it's occurring in biomed, obviously. I mean, this, you know, we've seen it in just one area, in genomics data. There's a flood of genomics data now that the process has become so much cheaper. We're going to see, you know, an order of magnitude more of this data hitting the labs now. So there's a lot of churning on how to handle that. And I guess in other areas of biomed as well, there's just more data as it is across the HPC spectrum.
There's a lot of medical scan data that comes in. There's the
right.
Genomic data that comes in. And so it's really across all these different areas. And it, even the academic research community, one of the speakers showed a chart of, you know, every 6 months, a different group's coming in saying, oh, by the way, we need another 100 terabytes of scratch space. And it's, you know, and it's not even clear what they're using it for. They just say, I need another 100 terabytes of scratch, right? And that's how these academic communities are using it. So it really continues to drive the data needs. And you know, I wouldn't have gone into this saying that biomed is even one of the top three data-hungry HPC verticals. I mean, when you compare it to things like oil and gas or entertainment. That's where you get into the really huge data. But you know, for an average HPC vertical to go in and spend all the average, I mean, in terms of the data needs, to have the whole conference go in and be about data, you know, really underscores the nature of the problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's right. You don't normally associate, of course, the genomics data I've heard a lot about, but it's not streaming data so much as some of these other verticals you mentioned. So it's, it seems smaller. But yeah, we talk about terabytes and petabytes as if they're nothing, but it's like, I mean, that's a tremendous amount of information. It's like, you know, the Library of Congress is just a little dot on that.
Well, it comes down to the data itself is so cheap that, you know, that people want to store it and access it all. Then the question becomes the hierarchy for how to do that. I was also pleased that discussions of tape came up, you know, that this is going to be an ongoing part of these areas. You get into these topics of active archive. FileTech was one of the sponsors. Isilon was one of the primary sponsors. So they've got a Cambridge computer. So they've got, you know, data companies who were there as the sponsors of the program very appropriately. Now, as the conference went on, they did get into other topics of interest like accelerators and cloud. And there, again, the biomed community was very much in line with what we've seen across the industry, which is there was a lot of testing of it. But there's also a lot of hurdles and, you know, not so much yet with the wide scale deployments. But there's so much talk about it that there's a lot of people who are looking at it and trying to figure out what role cloud or what role GPUs are going to be playing in their environments.
Right. I know at the recent NVIDIA GPU Tech Conference, we did see a lot of biomed applications being demonstrated there. But like you said, it's sort of just gearing up. But I see that continuing. It's a good application set for that. And cloud, I mean, frankly, I mean, cloud and HPC, I think I've read more about biomedical applications than maybe any other vertical for cloud. So I was some sort of surprised to see there wasn't more about that at this conference, but maybe just the Pfizers and the Eli Lillys are being a little secretive about what they're doing right now. But I know they are experimenting with it, and they're starting to get some results, but not being
well. They would like, they would like to. There's, you know, as with any cloud deployment, there's multiple possible hurdles to get over, and solving three out of your five hurdles doesn't get you there, right? You've got to be able to get over all of them. And for bio in particular, there's two big ones. One is the data management aspect of how do I transfer data in and out of the cloud in some kind of efficient fashion that doesn't impede my workflow. The other one that absolutely has to be solved is HIPAA compliance. And we saw the word HIPAA come up several times over the course of 2 days. And, you know, if the law says I can't let the data outside this firewall, then that's kind of a no-go.
Right, right. That doesn't apply to all bio data. I mean, some of the genomics data that they're doing or some of the drug discovery stuff is probably doesn't apply to that. But yeah, certainly medical records, things of that nature, they're going to have to comply with certain legal limitations there. So that is definitely a limitation.
Right. But well, and I should say HIPAA in the U.S. and its other similar regulations in other countries around the world. So HIPAA or HIPAA-like regulations.
Sure. Yeah.
We'll see more around cloud issues when we go to ISC Cloud. I've got another trip coming up to Frankfurt, Germany. Sue Korn and I are going to be heading to Frankfurt for ISC Cloud. We've got a report preview coming out at the same time for our HPC in the cloud report. We've done a thorough survey of cloud computing and HPC. So maybe next week we can talk about that.
Hey, that sounds good. I'm looking forward to that and seeing what your impressions are and what the research you've been doing as well.
I'm really looking forward to the conference.
All right. Until then, Addison, we shall be seeing you. Happy travels.
Thanks very much, Michael.
All right. So long.
We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.